Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, the pages of Vanity Fair, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Kat Napsa.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
And I'm Jennifer Landa.
And we've got a lot of news to get to, breaking news from a long time ago. And this is our chance to take a deep dive into the two big stories. And yes, more are coming out even as we're recording, because that's kind of how it works. But the Vanity Fair articles last week, which got a lot of people talking and a lot of people celebrating, full of great things, insight, troubling things, maybe, question mark, and definitely some big reveals. We're going to dive in here today on Four Center. Before we do, I'll let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, I have our 4Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. Before we catch up and dive into life adventures, it is getaway week, getaway packing time. We are getting ready to go to Star Wars Celebration. Joseph, you and I are going to be eating and drinking in hotel lobbies. That's our plan. No,
it's all tacos and action figures for us.
It is. But we do want to keep you guys updated on some of the things that we'll be doing there. The first one we've mentioned before, on Thursday, that is May 26th, dates don't matter this week, Thursday, 2 p.m., we're going to be on the podcast stage, Joseph and I, as guests of Alex and Molly Damon's Star Wars Explained podcast. Going to be covering a lot of things. It's kind of a fun hodgepodge from our favorite background characters, fun questions from the audience, talking Kenobi, any news drops. It's going to be kind of a Star Wars Explained Four Center catch-all episode. Going to be a lot of fun. Again, that's live on the podcast stage at 2 p.m. Thursday. And then Joseph, we could fill some people in on what we're hoping will be a Four Center meetup on Saturday. Yeah.
That's right. We have rough plans that might change because it's a wild convention. We were looking at our schedule and wanted to have a chance to have a meetup. Some other podcast people are doing this as well. We really got to get there and get the lay of the land to figure out exactly kind of where in the hotel space it's sort of permitted to say, hey, meet us in this corner. So we're hoping to do that on Saturday of the convention around 3:34, around that general time. If you're interested in that and know it's coming up on Saturday, just go ahead and check in on the Force Center Twitter feed. And we're going to tweet out once we get that all scheduled and make sure it all makes sense.
Yeah, 2% chance I say pool party at our hotel, but I'm probably not going to say that. Right.
I will be wearing 3 different Star Wars t-shirts at the pool. There will be no pastiness going on from me.
Same. I haven't swam shirtless since the 80s. All right. So I'm with you there. So as Joseph said, we're going to keep you updated, but we're looking at that Saturday around 4 p.m. spot. Yeah. A lot of things going on. And in fact, a couple of you have emailed, Hey, Ken, what's your schedule? Where can I meet up with you? I don't know. We have a rough idea, but that's also part of the fun. It is organic versus flowing, right? Rigid versus just go with the flow and finding that balance. So we're going to get to
it. That. Really, really is.
Yeah, it is. We love to catch up as always. We got a lot of news to get to, so I don't want to make that cut that short at all. But it was fun stuff. It is the feeling of Star Wars is in the air. So it's been a fun time there, Jennifer. Any adventures for you?
I mean, I've been rewatching everything, although I am currently at Force Awakens. You know, I got stuck on The Mandalorian because I was like, oh, let me just watch one episode from season 2. Okay, well, now I got to watch the next one. All right, the next one. I watched the whole second season. It's just so dang good. And now having rewatched some of the things from The Clone Wars and obviously Star Wars Rebels, it all fits together so beautifully. So I have been talking to my family is tired of Star Wars because everything comes back to it. And my daughter, I was explaining something to her today and I was like, you know, in Star Wars, and she's so, yeah. Yeah, I might need a little break, but man, I've just been loving it. It's so fun to go back and rewatch this. I don't get to do this very often, so this was a real treat.
Yeah, oh, that's so great. I imagine like some of the Bo-Katan stuff in particular really resonated after going through all the Clone Wars and Rebels.
Yeah. God, I love Katie Sackhoff. I love her from Battlestar Galactica, but yeah, I mean, just she's fantastic.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's great. That's great. Me. Yeah, I ended up watching Revenge of the Sith, though it was a week of documentaries. The Kids in the Hall, kind of oral history documentary, the George Carlin two-part doc, I'm about finishing that up. The documentary on Rolling Stone editor Ben Fong-Torres. It was Ken Documentary Weekend, a pop culture docs. But I made sure I stopped and watched Revenge of the Sith while I packed up some tech stuff for the convention. It was a lot of fun. Joseph, anything exciting in your Star Wars adventure weekend?
Well, first, I'm just having fun imagining you watching a bunch of documentaries and then Revenge of the Sith and going like, why aren't there like slow Ken Burns movements in the camera?
Yeah. Was this Carlin's Sith phase? Is this what this is? Yeah.
Kenobi scored a great victory against Grievous, but alas, it was to turn into ash. Anyway. I had some great Star Wars adventures because there's just so much Star Wars going on. But the big thing is, apparently my wife and I just love driving to Anaheim. Earlier this month, we had some friends who were at Disneyland. So we drove down to Anaheim just to have dinner with them. And then this last weekend, we went to Disneyland because our friends very kindly got us some tickets. So I'm just like, I just live on the road between Los Angeles and Anaheim now. But my wife and I had a wonderful day at Disneyland, many little Star Wars adventures. But the big thing is, finally got to go on Rise of the Resistance. And we actually went on twice. It was great. Oh. We figured out all the app stuff and we did the Genie Plus and the Lightning Lane and just basically like looked at my own phone and threw cash at it until it let me on the Rise of Resistance ride. We went in the morning. It was great. And then there was a big parade, the electrical parade that they haven't done in a while. And like the whole park was there and Sarah and I were way in the back. And then I was like, looking at my phone and like, it's only 40 minutes to get on Rise of the Resistance. So we rushed back in. And it was really, really great to experience twice. I don't want to spoil anything for anybody who hasn't been on the ride yet and wants to be. But what was really cool about the experience was when we used the Lightning Lane, we were able to get in really fast and we skipped the line and the ride was amazing. But then when we went back, we did this slow snaking through the line. It was just a great reminder of the storytelling power of the rides that in storytelling in general, that sometimes the slow build in the little details you pick up, you in the line, this shouldn't be a huge spoiler, you wind through the base that Vimeradi and everybody suffered to set up, and slowly going through that base and seeing how much work has been done to build up the resistance did make the ride even more powerful. So that was really great. And then final thing, when we went back in the evening and waited in that line, it's when they were doing the fireworks and they had a little announcement going off like, by the way, the fireworks are really loud here in Batuu, and they are. So it was this really great thing of it felt like the First Order was shelling us because we were already winding in, and there were just like these, you know, holes in the stone. So we could see the fireworks through the holes as the line went through. And there was just kind of this eerie silence in the line. It was like boom, 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 boom. And you'd see like flashes of light and like, we got to get out of here. The First Order is coming.
Immersive. Man. I love it.
Disney's so good, man. They make you feel like you're in a war. Wow.
They did a good job of it. So, yeah, really, really lucky and really enjoyed those rides.
I totally forgot that you hadn't experienced it yet because I've been sitting on that experience talking about that with you. So we'll do that off air so we don't spoil it for anyone else. But yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Great stuff in there.
That's great. Yeah, a little adventure for me, just kind of fun. I was starting to do the target runs, you know, how many protein bars am I going to have in my hotel room type of trip, trying to get that done. And I, as always, as Joseph and I always talk about here, if we go to a big box store that has a toy aisle, we're going to make that turn at one point to see what Star Wars toys might be there for us to purchase or just look at and dream of purchasing if you had more allowance money. And I did that, and I turned the corner, and there was two people kind of blocking the way, and I had that kind of like, I want to get it Queel. Oh, there's a Lando. I want to see. And I came back around. I did a second pass, and I realized it was Matt Martin and AJ Managing from Lucasfilm. And that's it made a fun joke of, could the Lucasfilm people get out of the way so I could look at the Star Wars toys, which, you know, I don't know if they'd be offended them or not, but it was a lot of fun. It was just fun. Small world, but they're excited for Celebration. We're excited for Celebration, and you never know who's going to be in your toy aisle. That's why you should always go to toy aisles, kids. And
that's right.
That's great. And that is a great picture. If you follow Matt Martin on social media, there's no doubt that he doesn't just work at Lucasfilm. He deeply loves Star Wars. And it's fun to imagine him going like, ooh, what action figures are at Target?
What's going on there? And I didn't pick up any toys. All right, let's get to the news. A lot to get to. Here's the scoop, kids. We know that as even recording, who knows how many more articles and interviews are being dropped by this big bounty of Vanity Fair articles, interviews, and details. We are going to be discussing two big ones here. The major article, The Revolution Will Now Be Televised, or whatever the title was. Vanity Fair is going to help us look ahead to Star Wars' future on TV. And then we're going to also, in the second half of the show, look at the Kathleen Kennedy 101 interview with Anthony Breznican and dive into some of the movie stuff and some of the bigger things in there. I know there was some stuff on Rogue One today with Tony Gilroy. I want to especially shout out Mark Canope in our Discord, who shared screenshots of that because I wouldn't have read it otherwise. My subscriptions of the Vanity Fair is not up to date, so I can't read those articles. But let's dive in. All right, take a breath, Ken. Here we go. This article dropped last week, and immediately, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about the discourse, but we're going to choose to really focus on what was in the article. Great reveals, big news, wonderful, fun things. But Joseph, Jennifer, what are your overall reactions to this article, how it happened, everything around it? Jennifer.
This is what I've been waiting for, especially from Anthony Breznican, who is a great journalist, nay, Star Wars journalist, I might say. He always knows how to ask really thoughtful questions, and people seem to open up to him, feel comfortable with him. And he's also a great writer, and what I enjoyed was how he set the stage, and he kind of not only shared the excitement, but also some of the drama leading up to this new slate of Disney Plus shows. So I just ate it all up.
Well said. I agree with that there. We'll talk a little bit about his questions later on, but it was good to see the Brez kind of come back onto the spotlight.
The Brez.
The good, the bad, and all of it there. But good to have the Brez there. Joseph, your overall reaction to this article, which, of course, you know, we read online. In the old days, this would have been mailed out, and we've been reading it around our house. But your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I did actually physically pick up the actual Vanity Fair, the magazine with the printing and nice. The smells and everything. I smelled this article. I agree with Jennifer, though, that I do think it is. I think it was set up as a story, right? The narrative mm-hmm. is that Star Wars has been back for a while. There have been massive successes. There have been stumbles in many people's opinions. So kind of what is next? So I think the fact that it was set up as a narrative was really good. I was delightfully shocked about the sheer amount of news dropped in this article. There was really a ton of stuff, like four or five things that normally would have been just huge news by themselves, and some major announcements, not presented as major announcements, presented as a peek behind the curtain. And obviously we're going to get into those. I also really liked that it drew out a lot of really human fun details, a lot of stories about how the different actors' children's were reacting or would react, all that kind of stuff. Great stuff there. And then I think the biggest thing for me is we've talked for years on Force Center, and we're certainly not alone, about wanting this Star Wars buffet. You know, realizing that it's a large fandom with different interests, different generations, different entry points, just different tastes, and kind of want a little something different out of Star Wars. And it's hard to make just like one movie or one show Star Wars these days. So wanting that buffet and being able to say, hey, if you're all about Obi-Wan, great. And if not, well, here comes Andor. And the fact that the article focuses on that and that the cover of Vanity Fair is basically like, the Star Wars buffet is coming into existence finally is really thrilling.
That's a great way to describe it. Yeah, that cover was great. A lot of the photos great. But yeah, that's kind of where I was overwhelmed by it in the way, in the spirit of what you're talking about, Joseph, where I was just like, by the time I caught up to it, it's one of those things where the tweets started dropping before I knew this existed. Right? Mm-hmm. It was like, what's happening? So I felt overwhelmed, like I was swimming upstream. But once I caught up, it was a big bounty of yes. Just like, look at this and that and that. And we're going to talk about the reveal of the John Watts show, which started floating around the internet, I think, even before that. But, you know, just to have that there, the Acolyte, it really, truly was like a checklist of not everything yet. We know there's still some answers out there lingering on some of the big questions we have about Lando and all those kind of shows. We'll get to those in time. But yeah, it was just wonderfully overwhelming of just this bounty of yes, bounty of Star Wars. So it's a good way to look at it there. But without a doubt, almost immediately, the discourse around the article sprung up, as I wouldn't expect it to go any other way. So without getting into the details of it there, I just wanted to ask both of you if that affected how you took in the article. How, you know, did you get to the article first, discourse later? Did you shield yourself from it? I'm curious if it affected you at all or in any way, Joseph.
Yeah, I think I was really lucky to do article first, discourse second. I checked my phone in the morning, and I can't remember. I think it was like an email about a tweet notification. It was one of the few times that Twitter's notifying, hey, here's the thing you're interested in. You're like, you're right, Twitter, I am. So I read the whole article, and I kind of expected it to be not a puff piece by any means, but I thought I expected it to be a little bit more just the kind of the human details with the actors, right? Of like, it's coming back. How does Rosario Dawson feel? How does Ewan McGregor feel? The fact that it was just kind of dropping news bomb after news bomb, I just read in shock. And then when I got to the quote that we're going to discuss, the one that I think was, you know, a little jarring in the main article, had much better context in the one-on-one interview with Kathleen Kennedy. As soon as I read that, I knew like, oh no.
Yeah.
This is going to be the discourse for a while, that one line. And then we're going to have to wait a while until fans really start to engage with all the big news there. So I think I kind of just accepted the discourse and let it wash over me.
Hmm. Oh, that's a, okay, that's good. I'm going to follow that lead next time, Jennifer.
Yeah. I read the article first. I loved it. I agreed with everything. I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. When I read that particular part of Kathleen Kennedy's comment, I think that's what we're referencing. And then a few hours later, all of a sudden, I saw all this discourse about that. And I went, oh my gosh, did I miss something? Like, I don't. And then I actually, for the first time, I listened to Vanity Fair hosted a space on Twitter, and Anthony Breznican was there sharing about the interview, what that was like and all this stuff. And it just sounded like how I envisioned it, which was just more of just a conversation. And I don't know, I didn't take it as black and white as perhaps some other people saw it. Again, we'll talk about that later, but I was really shocked. And it made me a little bit sad because I saw some people were really, really angry. And, you know, it just made me like, man, there's so many great things to pull from this article. And then that's the one that gets the most traction. And it was a little disappointing. And then I went back and I looked at that cover. And I, nothing's going to steal my joy from that cover. That is a framer. So
steal the joy. That's a great way to look at it. As I said, the discourse and the tweets and everything, including, I would say, make sure, like, the excitement from the article got me in the tweets too. Like, it wasn't, I didn't just see the negative thing, and I don't want this to come off as me tisking anyone here. I understand that quote, it deserves, or that section of the interview, both in both the main article and in the interview, they deserve an analysis and deserve a digger deep. And we're going to do that here. A digger deep. I think that's some sort of ice cream. My word enchiladas. There they go. What affected me was a kind of a here we go again vibe. And I didn't read the article for like 2 hours. Oh. I just didn't touch it. I was like, I just don't want to go into it. I just don't want to do this today. And he doesn't mind. Steve Ellis from Black Series Rebels, and you know, they're active, but they're not super active in the Star Wars discussion space anymore. They still have their show. Still, they'll be there dropping some pins at Celebration. But, you know, he's had a relationship with Star Wars over the last couple of years that's faded. He's pulled back a little bit and for a lot of different reasons. And he told me, he goes, I woke up at 5 a.m. because he has two kids now. You know that pain, Jen, where you're up early. Yes. And he goes, I read that article in at 5 a.m. In the dawn, breaking dawn of my house. And I for the first time in years, S on the end of that, years, felt joy for Star Wars. Hmm. And he goes, within 2 hours, the joy started to dampen again. Again, that's his personal journey, personal relationship with this, with the day and the discourse. But he goes, it kind of bummed me out again. All of it. Again, not just one side of the argument or anything like that. So I kind of felt that too, of just like, here we go again. But what we always say here, what does Star Wars say? Between darkness and light, there is hope. So we're going to push past that. We're going to move past it.
And can I throw in one thing real quick? Yeah. I know we're going to talk about the actual substance of the quote later, but I think for me, when we talk about the discourse, it always is not necessarily what the opinion is, because I think there's a reason to have lots of different opinions about that quote. It's about the way it's expressed.
Yes.
And I think that's what continues to be the challenge. So anybody listening who is, you know, upset, confused, annoyed, disagreed with that quote, I get it. I talk about the discourse, it's the way it's expressed with the vitriol and the anger and the stuff that Star Wars generally is not for.
Yeah, no, and I'm actually very glad you pointed that out, because that was kind of Steve's experience too. It wasn't necessarily the what, the how, it's just the kind of the why of it and why again, and just the loud noise that that happens. But again, I really don't mean that to be a finger wag. It's just, it is what it is, and you choose how you interact with it. And that's what I have to remind myself too. Like you said, Joseph, just the article falling over your head like a nice warm shower. That's not what you said, but it sounded like
it. Sounds great. I need a shower.
So anyways, because of that, we're gonna move on and focus on the big reveals. And yes, we're gonna get into some of the Kathleen Kennedy quotes and the solo of it all in a bit here, but we got some big reveals, and we want to talk about them. We got a lot on Andor. Tony Gilroy, who loves, apparently, you know, I've always said he's not a huge Star Wars fan, but he loves talking Star Wars. That is clear. Again, if you're going to read the third article that came out today, warning, spoilers, down to the episode numbers of when things happen. We're not going to talk about them here today. But to be clear, he was like, in this episode, blank, blank happens. Tony Gilroy pitched it to Diego Luna. I love this story, this phone call that Diego got, the back of a car. He pitched it as a refugee story of sorts. So we'll find a cynical nihilist Andor watching the Empire rapidly expand as he learns that he can't run forever and must join the fight. And that's just my general summary of a lot more that was said here. So how did you react to that, and how does that affect your anticipation for the show? Jennifer, I want to start with you, because over the last year or so, we've been talking about Andor and our excitement, but I want to get up to date with your excitement, especially now.
Oh my gosh, this really got me excited. I felt like Tony Gilroy was pitching me, and I said, yes, I am all in. I love how he described the show as having a quote, a huge orchestral Dickens. Dickensian. Dickensian ensemble cast. That really pulled me in. I am excited to meet new characters, explore Cassian Andor and his thoughts and his backstory. There's just so much. And I like that we're going to get multiple seasons of this. Mm-hmm. I am excited. You know what it made me think of? It sounded really epic, and it reminds me of like a Star Wars Game of Thrones. This might be it. The just kind of like the grand scope of it and how it sounds more. I mean, the sets, just if you look at the behind the scenes footage, it looks very like a movie set, mm-hmm. grand, you know? So we'll see.
He added the detail that there's over 211 speaking roles, 75 of them, quote, matter. And that led into the Dickensian quote that was pulled out from that interview and put into this main article. That's a lot. And that's a lot. And I think you're right, Jen. It could have that kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Joseph.
Yeah, I mean, I really like all these pieces kind of coming together, describing it as Dickensian. The quote that he had about that the majority of the first season is happening, at least when we're following Cassian, on the planet that he is currently living on. So that, to me, suggests why they can do bigger sets, why there is a longer cast or a larger cast of, you know, 75 speaking roles that matter. because if this is a truly a slowed down story of what it is to decide you must fight. If this is somebody who's just trying to get by, if Cassian is just trying to get by, and we are getting to know the people in his life and feel their pain as things are taken from them and made worse, it makes sense that they can really focus in on that. I didn't expect this. I expected it to start with Cassian already motivated and already involved. And it sounds like maybe that's going to get into the second season where we'll deal with some of the awful things he does in the name of hope and how he wrestles with that, which leads him to where he is in Rogue One. But I'm really excited for how timely this story is. There are lots of different ways to engage with Star Wars, including enjoying it a little bit more as escapism, space wizards with laser swords. But I think Star Wars has always been political. I think Cassian Andor's story is political, and this is so timely. There's that quote about the feeling of having to move is behind this story. The idea that this is a refugee, that getting to feel what it's like to be somebody who just like, I didn't make any choice. I didn't do anything. A large government is just causing a war on every planet I go to, and I have to keep moving. That's really, really exciting to me. It sounds like the whole show is going to be this, similar to journeys we've seen before, like with the Tico sisters or with Jin deciding they need to fight, but really taking the time is super powerful to me. Because I think we're in a period right now where it's very easy to give in to cynicism and nihilism and just here's all the things that are wrong and how they can never be fixed. And to go through a long journey with somebody who feels that way, understandably, and then decides to get involved is really powerful.
Yeah, I think this is a series that focuses on the hope that's prevalent in Star Wars, but might be a little dirty and grittier on the way there. And I don't mean a dirty and gritty adult Star Wars series, but just like starts in a different spot than Heroes Blade or I Have a Bigger Calling. This is someone who maybe even doesn't want the calling, is rejecting it because of everything that's around them that's horrible and would push you to the margins. So I'm with you. My excitement, Joseph and Jennifer, is the meter just exploded out of the top. You know, important depth. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say one of the other things is I love how much they focus on we're going to see the Empire being horrific to multiple planets. You know, colonizing and raiding planets of resources. That's always been implied by the Empire's actions in even the original trilogy with what they do to Alderaan. But we've been seeing so much of it in animation, books, video games. I think it's going to be really good for the story of Star Wars to show this is what the dark side is. This is what the Empire did to the galaxy in live action. So, you know, honestly, more casual Star Wars fans understand that's what the Empire is. That's who Palpatine is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I'm trying to, I don't want to make a pithy comment, but yeah, you might want to get rid of the imperial hats like I did after that.
I was just going to say that. Like, I don't have as much stormtrooper, like certainly first order stormtrooper stuff as I might have, because I have been viewing it from a different lens. So, I mean, of course I still have trooper artwork and stuff in my house, but you know, just give me a little bit of pause, especially with my kids.
I think the series will bring some important depth, as well as just being probably a really cool spy thriller. Mm-hmm. Which is one of Gilroy's strengths. Obviously, it's why he's on this project here. But I also look at it as just it's an exploration of another kind of path to rebellion, and a very important one. Again, one on the ground, one that is we've, like you said, just has been touched upon. Tarkin towns, Tarkin initiatives, all these kind of things. The Death Star, we know the dark side destroys, and the Empire is an arm of the dark side in many ways, including quite literally with Palpy around there. So I'm excited about those details. And out of those details emerges that the story of Mon Mothma will run parallel of sorts to Andor's story. So let's talk Mothma. We're very excited that Genevieve O'Reilly is back. Thoughts on this revelation that the leader of the rebellion in a lot of ways is not just going to be showing up in the background. This is part of her story as well. Joseph, let's talk Mothma.
Yeah, I'm really thrilled by that because I like the character. I like the actor. But in this context, they're describing it as a refugee story. And Cassian Andor is the refugee. That puts Mothma in this really interesting light if we're not already meeting her as basically, you know, the leader who sends her agent out on missions. If he's going through this refugee hell, it really puts the spotlight on Mon Mothma is someone of relative privilege who could have just gone along with it, right? Mm-hmm. She's in the Senate. She's from a core world, Chandrila, which from everything we know of canon is perfectly prosperous core world, probably not suffering from the Empire as much. She's a person who could just go, yeah, it's happening to other people, and I'll be fine with it in my position of power. That makes it a really interesting story to see somebody who is a actual refugee like Cassian on his way to getting involved in somebody who could choose pretty easily to just ignore the horrors like Mon Mothma, but instead chooses to sacrifice so much to get involved. That's really interesting. And that photo of her in a new dress.
Oh, yeah.
Proving that Mon Mothma has more than one dress, finally. That dress speaks of wealth, class, style, and really reminds you that this is the world that this person is operating in, who is choosing to get in and fight the fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Jennifer, thoughts on Mothma, the importance of her character, and the importance of the dress, all there.
You know, I had that same thought, Joseph. I was like, what is the fire inside of her that makes her want to join this fight? Where does that really come from? And I want to learn more about that thought process, because she certainly did not have to choose that path. She was always a very mysterious character for me as a kid. You know, watching her in Return of the Jedi. And so I'm glad that we're going to get to really explore her character more. Obviously, we learned a lot about her in the Clone Wars. Now, the timeline might be off here, but I had a crazy theory, and I was like, how cool would it be to see Mon Mothma taking young Princess Leia under her wings, you know, offering some advice? Maybe it's just one scene. We're going to talk about recasting a little bit later, but I think that that would really be great. And it's going to be a great juxtaposition, as you said, between Cassian's story and her story of privilege. It's just, it's great.
Yeah, I love that.
Mm-hmm. 75 important speaking roles. We can add a 76, right? Sure. Nah, you're both just hitting all the notes here on this news. I consider this the best news in the article because I just super excited to have this character around. But I just thought, this is Andor. Again, we're servicing, and we need to service Cassian Andor. And I think this all will, but to just be like, yeah, no, this is part of it. And it doesn't even necessarily, it's there, it's parallel, doesn't connect quite yet. Or we're going to play around with how he gets to there. And we know where this ends up, and we're exploring. But Mothma is this connective force that makes the rebellion happen in my eyes. You know, there's so many different paths to rebellion, but I truly believe it doesn't happen as we know it. If she's not there, if she doesn't make that speech to the end, if she is not that she's crown leader, but someone that it needs to pull all the strands and tie them together. I think that's Mothma. And so Joseph, you're hitting all the notes on the deep themes. Jen, you're hitting it too. I'm so excited we get to see more, and that maybe more people will get to experience what I feel a lot of Star Wars fans know and love about the character of Mon Mothma. It's going to be fun.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So the impending Kenobi-Vader duel in the series of Obi-Wan Kenobi has been pitched to the public as a rematch of the century vibe. You know, we got Vader, Kenobi, one more time, like it's a boxing match. But Deborah Chow pitched it here as a love story of sorts, saying Kenobi would never stop caring for Anakin. This is part of the reason they decided it was, in the end, after some debate, the right choice to bring the character of Vader back, to bring Hayden Christensen back, to fill it out. We've seen a lot of interviews out there about Hayden's thoughts on what he wants to do with the character and all these kind of things and why he came back. And the answer, you know, to the why is we're going to get the full story on that, but I just love everything so far. So I just wanted to talk to you both about thoughts on this as we head into the series, that this is truly a love story between brothers and more than just a let's go fight. It's something bigger and more important. Yeah, Joseph?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, this is just so spot on. I love hearing Deborah Chow saying that. You know, I think if you just kind of absorb it from a cultural perspective, like, yeah, blue lightsaber, red lightsaber, mm-hmm. you know, Anakin must be so mad. Anakin Vader must be so mad at Obi-Wan for cutting all his limbs off. And Obi-Wan must be so mad at Anakin for falling to the dark side. And like, yeah, but I mean, what is the last thing that Kenobi said to him? You were my brother, Anakin. I loved you, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's right there. It is. That's the heartbreak. I failed you and I loved you and I'm mad at you for making this choice. And I know it's your choice, but is there anything I could have done to help you not make that choice? Mm-hmm. Like that's the conflict, right? I love this quote from Deborah Chow, who said it was quite hard not to include the person who left Kenobi in such anguish in the series. And I also thought it was kind of a huge reveal in the Kathleen Kennedy interview that she says, I think what Deborah's done really effectively is she's explored the interior life of Obi-Wan, because we find Obi-Wan at a point when he thinks he's killed Anakin.
Mm-hmm.
That is a huge thing that fans have been discussing and debating, because we know that Obi-Wan is aware of the name Darth Vader because Palpatine uses it in the hologram, right?
Right.
So that's been a lingering question of, does in those 10 years, does Obi-Wan feel the presence of this dark side, you know, out there that's familiar? That's some twisted version of Anakin. Does he hear rumors in town of this scary guy named Darth Vader and go, Darth Vader, wait.
Yeah.
I think that's a huge revelation about this show, that part of this is going to be Obi-Wan's realization of, I've thought I killed him all these years, and that means if he's alive, there's a chance, and I have to. Mm. That's huge. That is huge to make that an immediate motivation from Obi-Wan, instead of something like, I know he's out there and I should deal with it, but I want to stay here with Luke. Mm-hmm. If the sudden realization that he is alive and you can choose, yes or no, you're going to try? You're going to try to get to him? You're going to try to get to your brother?
Yeah, I really, and Jennifer, I'll let you'll slide in here, but I love what you said there, Joseph. Just like, if he's alive, I have to go do this. I have to. Now, that doesn't make it easy. Doesn't mean he doesn't want to maybe try to run at times. That's obviously going to be part of it, but that is a big reveal. It's been a fun canon question. You can look at it from that angle, and we will, and I can't wait to get some of the details, but it's beyond that, the emotion of it. And there's more, to me, there's a little bit more punch by the information finally coming into his lap, maybe being confirmed, maybe, I thought I'd heard that. I don't know. There's a lot of Darth Vaders in the galaxy. It could be anyone else. I don't know. I don't know. Doesn't matter to me. It's just what the impact. And I just think this is the right angle on it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there was a chance they would do any other way on it. I just think it's great to have it highlighted as we go into the series. It is a rematch, a fight, a duel, but it's about the connection, the love, as it should be. So, Jen, your thoughts on this revelation?
Yeah, I mean, this is human. This is human nature, right? It's not like we just go, "Hey, I'm going to fight you," right? Maybe some people do, but the deepest wounds are caused by usually the people that you care about and that you love. I mean, that's why, you know, family. Oof, man, there's a lot of family drama, and that's why it makes such a great story. And so, if you go back and watch the Clone Wars and the prequels, you really see their relationship and how it evolves, how complex it is. Mm. It's not just, you know, master and apprentice. It's not just brothers. It's like father and son. It's best friends. It's like this deep, deep love that can cause you such anguish and torture, right? Yeah. And so I love that that's what is driving this whole story. Because it's really easy to take two legacy characters, right? And have it just be a cool lightsaber rematch. You know, like the Darth Vader scene in Rogue One is really freaking cool. But to layer this betrayal and love underneath that, this rematch, oh my gosh. It makes it so that you, it will not, if you don't have that depth, it would pale in comparison to their duel on Mustafar. So there's no way that you're going to compare it. It's just going to add to their story. And that's what I'm happy about.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've got a couple questions and totally understandable of worrying about, like, is this just going to be, you know, the way they're pitching rematch, is this just going to be, hey, they fought a third time when we've seen two important fights between them. And the thing that I've always said is I really hope it's an emotional rematch. Mm-hmm. And this feels like utter confirmation of it and is, you know, yet another example of why I do trust a lot of the creative decisions, because they do keep the emotions as the guiding principle.
Yes.
Oh yeah. We're going to talk about guiding principles in the second half here. Oh, I love some of that stuff. I did pass by, I was in my old mall this week. I had to go pick something up and I passed by the Hot Topic and the Kenobi art was in the window with the fight, the one that we're seeing. It looks really cool, but I wouldn't mind if they put Obi-Wan Kenobi, a Star Wars love story, underneath it. I think that would work. Leslie Headland. We love Leslie Headland when she talks about Star Wars. She gave some wonderful insight into The Acolyte, saying it's about 100 years before The Phantom Menace and will center around political, personal, and spiritual things during an Age of Enlightenment. I'm summarizing a little bit here, but she says an Age of Enlightenment when the Jedi aren't out and about getting into skirmishes. You know, they got clean outfits is kind of what you mentioned there, but obviously a lot more to what she was saying. Still a lot left to learn about this series. I'm just excited that we got a little mention of it here, but thoughts on this, Jennifer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it made me think. I was like, oh boy, going to dive into the High Republic, because I think it is kind of going to be, if you know the High Republic, it's just going to add a little bit more. I don't think you're going to have to know about it, but it certainly will help. And there are so many fans that are loving the High Republic content. So it makes sense. Yeah, I'm really excited because, you know, she's also Leslie Headland. She's a fantastic filmmaker who really knows how to balance intense drama with comedy and dark comedy. Mm. So I can't wait to see how she brings that into Star Wars. Mm.
Yeah, I really agree with you there. I'll just say quickly here, Joseph, and I'll let you close out this section over here. Obviously, I'm just very excited for the series because every time I read or hear Leslie Headland talk about Star Wars, what she feels Star Wars is, or her just experience, I find myself just nodding along a lot. Like, yeah. Oh, I totally get that. Oh, that's great. You felt that. I'm so glad you got that. I'm just excited what she does with this series here. But I will say, I do eventually want some clarity if this is a, quote, High Republic show or not. Doesn't matter to me either way. The reason I say this is I've had a few of those offline, I call them comic book shop conversations, where a lot of people are excited for the series, by the way. The most negative, quote unquote negative I've heard is, I don't know what that is. But other people are like, ooh, that sounds pretty good. Oh, Russian Doll. I like Russian Doll. I've had a lot of positive conversations, but a lot of people believe this is the High Republic show.
Right.
Or it's the, quote, end of the High Republic era. And now it could very well be, again, they're mentioning the timeline there, 100 years before Phantom Menace, put kind of smack dab in the middle of some of the High Republic stuff there, as we know. I just would love some kind of clarity. Because it could end up being a disservice to the show, where expectations are being stoked a little bit. No one's fault. No one's doing that. But I mean, I've talked to one particular example. It comes to mind is my old comic book shop manager. He just was like, "Oh, I love the High Republic era. I can't wait for that High Republic show to come out." And I was like, "I don't know if that's the case." And I don't want you to be like, "Hey, where's the Elzar man?" Not this one. Maybe it could happen that way. I don't know, Joseph. I'll say that and then pitch it to you to take us home here on that.
Yeah, I think this is about era. I don't think it's about characters or story. Maybe there will be echoes of what happens at the end of the High Republic initiative. You know, we were just about to start phase two, then head into phase three. We started 200 years before Phantom Menace, right?
Yeah.
And this is 100 years before Phantom Menace. So I think to me, it is more about building out an era. And I think that it will be exciting to see some of the costumes, you know, that we've seen in illustrations, in live action, the way Leslie Headland is talking about. And I think there is a possibility that the publishing side really knows, like, here are the ramifications of the end of phase three. Here's why the Jedi kind of head in the direction they do. Mm-hmm. And that Leslie Headland will be playing with that knowledge of here's how the fight with the Nile resolves. Mm-hmm. And here's how it emotionally affected the Jedi or changed the order. I think that's about it. That's what I'm reading. And then this is its own story. I think the High Republic thing, which I'm thrilled by, is distracting for me from the most exciting thing about this, which is also the most basic, that it is being described as a mystery thriller.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
So many of us Star Wars fans have been pining for them to explore different genres, right? Mm-hmm. You think about what a mystery thriller means. That means with characters that we have never met before in an era that is open to anything can happen pretty much except for Yoda can't die. The Sith can't be stopped. That's about it. Mm-hmm. And if it's a mystery thriller where we, the audience, truly don't know the answers and we're watching week to week and there are true questions like who did this crime or who can be trusted or has a Jedi fallen to the dark side? And we truly don't know the answers and we get to discuss every week like a mystery. Mm-hmm. That's going to be an entirely different and engrossing vibe for Star Wars. And that reflects the one of the reasons the High Republic has been successful is that we can fall in love with characters and they can die.
Yeah.
And we haven't had that in a TV show as much for a long time. And I think that's going to be the big wow of this show.
That's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with you there. I have to be honest. I find myself overly protective of this show already. I don't know why. I'm just so excited for it in so many different ways. So I just already seen some. Oh, I think Darth Plagueis is going to be the big villain at the end of this. The end of the High Republic. Mark Yanro, young Palpatine. Maybe, could be. We don't know. I have that. Maybe it's that Force Center mantra. Speculate responsibly. I just. Based on really just that one conversation I had, a lot of little conversations, but one conversation where my pal was so excited to see the High Republic end on the Acolyte. And I was like, just be careful.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say, I think what the Acolyte is going to be about is whoever the Acolyte is, which we don't know yet. And it sounds like from what she said that it's going to be a mystery thriller. It's going to be, galaxy hopping from planet to planet. Mm-hmm. And it's going to, experiment with metal around in with the dark side.
Yeah.
And whoever the Acolyte is and whatever that character is an Acolyte of. And I can't wait to find those things out.
There you go. We'll whip up that thumbnail. The Acolyte is the Acolyte here. Final question of this half of the show. This was a big reveal. Like I said, it started to float around on the internet. You know, rumors come from wherever, and sometimes you believe them. Sometimes they're spot on. Sometimes they are just what they are. But this is a confirmation of some of the talk, and it was exciting. The John Watts-led series, currently with a production code name Grammar Rodeo, which is a Simpsons reference, I can respect that, was revealed. Chris Ford will be one of the writers. They're coming over from the Spider-Man world in the MCU. It'll be in the post-Return of the Jedi era with a 80s Amblin-like coming-of-age vibe that looks to be centered, based on casting calls, around kids 11 to 12. I'm calling this a Force Center exciting. Jennifer, thoughts on John Watts and a coming-of-age story post-Return of the Jedi?
Oh, this is what I've been waiting for. Those movies, Goonies, Stand By Me, E.T., those movies shaped our generation. So I am thrilled that we are going to get a Star Wars version of that, and then I'll get to share it with my kids. I think it's a genius idea. I think it's going to hook a younger audience who may not be diehard fans yet. And I think that that's really, really smart. And if you cast them at 11, look at the Stranger Things kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can have all sorts of possibilities. They can
you
keep
got
working
a series,
for it.
Kid. You got you five got- seasons. Yeah.
That's right. So I'm really looking forward to this one.
Yeah, I'm right there with you on that. And Jennifer, you're not alone. I think for a long time we've been hearing this younger, whatever you want to call it. Sometimes it was a Harry Potter Jedi school type of idea. All that's saying is coming of age for a new era, Joseph, right? Am I off base on that? That was a big call for let's grow up with some other characters.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it makes a ton of sense. These creators make sense. John Watts and Chris Ford, you know, who worked on Spider-Man Homecoming. And then, of course, John Watts doing all the Spider-Man movies, which are very much about not just Spider-Man, but also his other friends. How do they take their first steps into a larger world kind of thing? I think Star Wars has always done this, where it's had, you know, a youth character or two, but mm-hmm. usually it's kind of centered on one, right?
Mm-hmm.
You watch Rebels and you can relate to all the characters, but it's initially really centered around Ezra, right? He's the mm-hmm. perspective character. Luke is the perspective character. Anakin is the perspective character. So to take that and go, we're going to have four or five or six or however many of these kids, and it's going to be a little bit more of that, like, Breakfast Club. Which one are you? Are you all of them? Which one were you? You know, that kind of vibe, and you can identify with all of them.
Yeah.
Is really interesting and different to me. I really like the era that it's set in after Return of the Jedi, because it makes sense for kids coming of age and even their parents to be okay. Like, what is this new galaxy? Is mm-hmm. it safe? Is it dangerous? Where? What's going on? And I think the big question for me that I want to know about this is kind of, what is the threat? What is the external conflict? You know, like, what? You know, I get that it's probably kids, you know, stealing something and going out on a dangerous run they shouldn't, and then having to encounter the world. But, like, are they going to see a dead body?
Yeah.
Are they going to go see the Coruscant?
Right.
Did they hear about a cool Sith temple? Like, what's the conflict? Where are they going?
Mm. Kind of like that. Oh, that's the hidden Sith temple. It's not just a fun game show idea. Love that. Yeah, I think this is a great idea. Like I said, there's been a thirst for this kind of Star Wars story for a while. And you're right, Joseph. It's not just one kid. It's almost like the kids, and maybe the adults will be having the wah-wah-wah-wah-wah-wah kind of voices in here. It's all about their experience. And I'm with you, too. I really love this proposed era for the show, because it's a lot of change, reestablishment. A lot of that kind of big stuff is going on in the galaxy. So it's a good way to look at it through the eyes of the generation coming up. Whereas, like, Ezra was a good perspective on the rebellion at that time, but also the bigger force questions and why we do things and why we help and destiny choices and those things. So this could be a little different. I'm not saying that one of these kids or all of these kids couldn't have a little touch of the force. I would kind of expect that. But to me, this isn't Luke's new Jedi school day one, right? This is something else.
Right.
I'm kind of hoping for just one or two of the kids to be force sensitive and just not know what the hell that's about.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, the powers manifesting at that age, it has some obvious metaphors that you can play with that are really interesting. And it's a great way to look at the galaxy of, like, no, this information has been wiped out. People don't know what that's about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exciting times.
I hope that they, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go, Jen, please.
No, I hope that, you know, with these kids, I'm assuming there's like maybe four kids. I hope that one of them is like a Twi'lek or, you know, so it's not just all like human looking kids. Come on, a Rodian kid. Come on. Anything, you know. That's what makes it Star Wars.
Yeah. I want the bad boy to be a Rodian. The cool kid who's pushing the edge.
Right.
Hey, tell you what, I want a young Gungan. That's what I want.
Oh.
There you go. There you go. So that is our look. And yes, are there other things in this article we're going to talk about? Yes, some stretched on out to the Kathleen Kennedy interview. Some were just kind of leaving on the table. It was a big article, but we can't be talking all day. So we're going to take a quick break. But before we do, Joseph, we have a Force Center Recommends, an audiobook we think you should try out on us.
Yeah, you know, I read it recently. I've been talking about it. And so I figured, why not? Let's recommend Kenobi by John Jackson Miller.
I love that idea. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. All right, quick break, and then we will come back to talk about Anthony Brezikin sitting down with Kathleen Kennedy one-on-one. Stick around for more Force Center.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back to Four Center. We are digging deep into the Vanity Fair articles, at least two of them. By now, there's probably nine, but that's okay. More yeah. Star Wars to digest. So this big first article drops, a lot of hubbub, a lot of discussion around some of the Kathleen Kennedy quotes, dare I say incendiary. I don't think that's fair to the quotes, but maybe that's the result. But so the day after, the big article, Variety dropped a one-on-one interview from March, which is interesting, we should note that time, from March, with Kathleen Kennedy and Anthony Bresnikan. So, though both articles had revelations and insights on the movie side of things, this interview had more to offer on the film side, so we're going to talk about those here. So here are some of those revelations. Kennedy said the film side will be more about persistent storytelling as opposed to trilogies. She hesitated to use that word trilogy anymore regarding these projects, and that they have a, quote, roadmap on the film side. So how do we interpret that? What do we like about that? What gives us pause? Jennifer, you like this roadmap idea and persistent storytelling?
I really like this idea. I think it's what fans have been wanting it to be cohesive. And this is it. You know, people have compared Star Wars to Marvel. How can we be more like Marvel? You know, she said in Star Wars, all these things need to be connected. And I thought that, you know, it's not just about the films, it's connecting it to the series. And I'm sure there's going to be animated series too. So I like that it takes the pressure off of having it to be a trilogy, because not every movie needs to be made into three. You know what I mean? Yeah, not every story needs to be a trilogy. It can just be one, one standalone. So yeah, I think that they're heading in the right direction for sure.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. They're not. I'll say, you know, any pause I have is I agree and acknowledge what you're saying, Jen, about there has been a call for, quote, a plan. I just don't want fans to think this is some down to the beat, every moment planned out plan. This seems like a roadmap that guidelines the spine. And again, it's just, I think I just get overprotective and just be open to it. Just see where it takes you versus some kind of super connective, you know, checklist of ideas here. But I get what you're saying. Yes. I agree with that, Jen. That's kind of what people are looking forward to. And they get a chance to do that moving past Skywalker saga, if you will, which is discussed in the article. So, Joseph, I'll pitch it over to you here. What do you think about this roadmap here?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I read Persistent as we want to have the film structured a little bit more like MCU or even the current DC, which is, you know, willing to kind of keep a continuity going, but also shift things around as needed, not within continuity, but like, where's the focus? So I think that there's a part of me that wishes like, yeah, I wish they just announced an Old Republic trilogy. But I also think I need to accept that times change and things evolve. And that's not the world that we're living in. I think that what is meant by persistent storytelling is the everything is connected, sometimes really intimately, sometimes loosely. We'll get into a little bit more what that spine could be. But I think also from a business side, it's really like, hey, if Taika's film is a hit, maybe we'll make a sequel to that and it will evolve into a trilogy. But we're not promising a trilogy. And I think it's also like if we introduce characters or an era or a world that they can kind of manage expectations a little bit more, that like every Star Wars film should be successful, but maybe they can set the terms of success of like, we expect the Taika's one to be a big, huge blockbuster. And now we have this smaller film that we didn't spend as much money on and expect smaller numbers. That's what made Marvel successful, is they expected the Avengers to be a blockbuster. And then people were pleasantly surprised when Ant-Man did a decent little amount of money. Nobody expected Ant-Man to be the Avengers.
Right.
And I just think business wise, they know that's where they need to get to. We're like, some of them, we're going to, you know, point the bat to that. The ball is going to go out of the field. And other times you're going to be like, we meant this to be a double. We meant it to do that amount of money and have people not go Star Wars is dead if it makes Ant-Man money.
Right.
Right.
Now, well said. Well said. And yeah, I think you both are hitting the nail on the head on what a roadmap might actually mean. The evolving nature of it is important to me. A trilogy could emerge. More storytelling could emerge, keeping to that spirit of why not, which we'll discuss here in a bit. Taika Waititi's film will be out of the gates first. This is, dare I say, breaking news in a way, or at least confirms some things. She says the reason it's out of the gates first is it fits more into this roadmap. While Patty Jenkins' Rogue Squadron is officially pushed off to the side, while Jenkins continues to work out the script, Kathleen mentioned that they want that film to connect to this central spine they're working on. So that's a lot of information, Joseph. That's a lot of information confirming talk, rumors, stories, and just kind of giving a bigger picture on what's going on.
Massive, massive confirmation. We've had lots of rumors and lots of reporting, but that is massive confirmation that the script is still being worked on, that a part of what the question is how much is it a one-off film versus how much does it relate to the larger spine that they're building? And it also says a lot about when we might expect another Star Wars film, right? And maybe not December. Who knows? That, you know, it's a huge amount of news to say like, the Rogue Squadron is not coming out when we thought it was. So there's that just kind of business news. And then for me, talking about the central spine, that's huge news because I think there was a world where it was, okay, well, the film side is going to be like Disney Plus, where it's just going to be like, we're going to do this one, we're going to do that one. And, you know, we'll try to make them bigger. But I like the idea of a spine because I think the movie slate should be differentiated from the Disney Plus slate. So the idea that they're even a little bit connected in any way, it makes it kind of a reason for them to be in the theaters, in my opinion. And I think when they say central spine, the way I interpret that is it could be anything from they've picked out a corner of the timeline or a corner of the galaxy, or maybe there's a new family line that is running in the background, or even there's some sort of, you know, mystical object to lightly interlock the movies. The spine could be anything to make it feel like it's its own thing. And I can't wait to kind of find out what that spine is.
Yeah, especially as it relates to Rogue Squadron, which kind of had this, weird, saying weird in a negative way, but just like weird off in the corner. It's in the future. It's a bunch of pilots. Who are they fighting? Oh, we were going to find out, but it always kind of stood out to me as where does that fit? Where does that fit into everything?
Yeah.
So I agree with you on this take on the central spine. And I'm still rooting for Jenkins to find a way to tell her personal story. I was moved by her video on that investor day a couple years ago now, right?
Yeah.
I really got behind her on that. Other things have popped up, you know, Wonder Woman 84, all these kind of things. A lot of conversation around her as a filmmaker, around her as a screenwriter. At the end of the day, I, as a fan, was moved by that, and I hope she gets a chance to find a way to tell that story while being in the central spine of Star Wars there going forward. Jen, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'll just say that, you know, I think that what she wants to do is replicate what Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau have done with the Mandoverse. And they've really, and Deborah Chow, they've really, well, she's not part of the Mandoverse. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, the series is what I'm saying, in that it feels very cohesive. It feels very intentional. It feels planned in the best way. And I think that they're trying to do that with the films. And like you said, Joseph, it's going to be different. It's going to be its own thing. But yeah, it's like she's bringing all these different filmmakers together and writers and such. And it's like, okay, what is our plan? How are we going to execute this? Because there's just so much pressure. And, you know, people can be really harsh. And yeah, the box office can be really harsh. And so they want to get it right.
Yeah, they want to be able to be responsive. I think maybe that's the biggest thing, is they want to be able to be responsive to what really lands and what maybe doesn't as much.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Absolutely. She said that nothing was on the horizon for a Feige-led Star Wars film at the time of this interview, because I saw a lot of people confused, some people even upset at that. But yes, this interview was again conducted in March. And since then, Michael Waldron has said, yeah, we're working on it. So we won't acknowledge that. But at the time, she says nothing was on the horizon for Feige-led Star Wars. And Rian Johnson's trilogy is still technically in development. And Rian comes into or is involved in some talks about the big picture, as she hinted at that. But she said Rian is too busy to commit to these. And that's under, we get it. Knives Out is Netflix deal. She highlighted that as well. But Kennedy, the most interesting thing out of this, Joseph, Jennifer, to me, was Kennedy spoke of wanting creators on the film side that will commit long term, like Favreau and Filoni have on the TV side, and others as well, to be clear. So does this make sense? Because you this thing about evolving, Joseph, you're talking about, or hey, maybe the trilogies emerge. Backs this up, actually, for what Kennedy's saying, of that Taika's not maybe just swinging in for one film. She talks about, you can't just do that. You can't just come in for a year, shoot a film. This is a 3 to 5 year commitment in a lot of ways. And that could just be for one project, of course. The film could take that long. But I like this. I like this kind of talk. So any ideas, any thoughts on what this really means to the film side, Joseph?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it speaks to, you know, whether however you feel about the sequel trilogy, I think Kathleen Kennedy as a producer is acknowledging that there is a narrative and an opinion by some fans that the sequel trilogy was unplanned. I think that the sequel trilogy holds together really well, but that's my opinion about the films. And I think acknowledging that that is a narrative out there and an opinion out there is something that it feels like Kathleen Kennedy, like a good producer, is trying to get ahead of and saying, yeah, we do. We need somebody to who really cares, who's just not just knocking one out and then running off to do their next thing, but is like invested of like, if Taika Waititi introduces a new timeline or a new, you know, section of the galaxy, and then is like really personally invested in like, yeah, no, I have an idea for a sequel, or this one other character might pop up in somebody's next movie, and I want to be a part of that too. That all just really makes sense to me for the way that storytelling is evolving right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Jennifer?
Yeah, I mean, Favreau is a very, very busy filmmaker. And the fact that she said, she's like, it was fantastic, that this was his only project. Star Wars was his only project that he really just dived into. And that's what you need. I mean, J.J. Abrams is a very, very busy filmmaker as well. And I'm sure he had a lot of other things going on when he did The Force Awakens, right? Even though that was, I'm sure, a primary focus. Yeah. But at the same time, it's like these are epic tales, and you got to go all in, and not just with your film, but how it's going to relate to somebody else's film and collaborate with them. And so it's just, yeah, it's definitely, it's a new era, and she's learning lessons. I'm sure. I love the sequel trilogy, but Joseph, you're right. The criticism around it is that some people didn't believe that it kind of was planned or didn't fit all well together, but yeah.
Including the writer of this article. Anyways, It's an interesting subject because, you know, JJ comes in and he gives his heart to two films without a doubt, but he's also shopping for that big deal. Remember that was going around. Dan and Dave, they come in and leave, and they, you know, the Netflix deal was happening, and there was those thoughts that maybe that upset Disney. And not that these creators can't work on multiple projects. I mean, I think I've launched 35 podcasts this week alone. It's possible you could do it, but I think the spirit of what she's saying, is important to connect with here. What she's saying, just like this, you're not just doing another film, you're doing Star Wars, and the fans want to know that. We want to know that. And I think everyone generally is brought their hearts to the table. Certainly Ryan has. But then his career changed and his direct trajectory changed. And so other opportunities emerge. And I don't think Knives Out was conceived as a trilogy or a series. Oh, but hey, it worked. Mm-hmm. And now we're going to do this. So he goes that way. And Star Wars is obviously something bigger, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And to me, it makes really a lot of sense. And I think that Lucasfilm should be given a lot of credit for saying, okay, it's a new era and we're going to reach out to lots of different creators. And then in that process, discovering like, we have opinions about what Star Wars is. And sometimes we butt heads with creators. So we need to look at it in a different way. And it almost feels to me is a little jokey, but it almost feels like the original era was like, let's date around.
Yeah.
And then realize like, ooh, that doesn't work. We are looking for long-term commitment.
We want to go steady. That's what it is. Yeah. Well, then we get to what I feel is actually my favorite part of the interview is some of the most interesting stuff here. And we're going to get to the big solo stuff soon. Don't you worry all out there. But Kennedy talked about the tenets and DNA of Star Wars a lot. At one point discussing how they drive the storytelling through the lens of the filmmakers, and Lucasfilm puts guardrails around the projects built on the fundamental values found in George's mythology. This includes the deeper meanings around selfishness, selflessness, and the overall mythology, again, that George created. That seems like something we would support here at Force Center. But if so, why? What appeals to us about that? And do we want to see those guardrails pushed out a little bit, Jen?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is the spine of Star Wars, right? Is to have these themes, these values. It is what makes it magical. That it's not just awesome costumes and flashy effects, right? It's also that there's so many great messages. I mean, that like we're talking about with Andor, that you can comment on what is happening in our world. And kind of, you know, it's a happier pill to swallow, right? It's an easier pill to swallow when you're getting the message with cool lightsabers. So yes. I don't think it can ever lose those values and, you know, those themes.
It's really important to me because I think you can, in a way, break Star Wars if you fudge some of the lessons and fudge some of the intentions. And sometimes I find us repeating, hey, this story is about X or this story is about Y, and it's only like a handful of themes. There's obviously a lot more, and there's obviously a lot more to take out of every story. But I just kind of, as a fan, want it. I need Star Wars to kind of hit those big notes. And they talked about this in this article about the, you know, hey, I heard the, you know, rumors Rey might have been a Kenobi, and how even Kathleen Kennedy was like, well, that would have meant that Kenobi had a kid. Which, again, maybe that's not a problem, you know, and by the way, that, you know, we're looking at you, Corky, on Mandalore. Like, you know, there's been some questions around that, too, in the fandom. But that they would undo some of the stuff, some of the beliefs, some of the Jedi things, or we'd have to analyze just why. Why would we do that? It's not just a plot point. It's not a checklist. Why? And I really love that idea, Joseph, that this is what her and Story Group or anyone else around there, some of the responsibilities is keeping those guardrails on. So do I want them pushed out? I'm always good with something being pushed out, but I also want the track to be strong and steady, you know?
Yeah, I love the guardrails.
Yes, I do.
That's my big takeaway. I feel like the guardrails is almost going to become a catchphrase here on Force Center, because we get so many questions where people are like, are you nervous they're going to mishandle this? Are you nervous they're going to mishandle that? Which is all, you know, love taking those questions and really understand where they're coming from. But I think that's the thing for me, is that there might be individual episodes or beats or characters that I like more or less. But I feel like in this whole era, the guardrails have been there. And I think some of the times where it's been a little bit messy from a publicity standpoint, where Lucasfilm has parted ways with a creator. But I think it's because of the guardrails, because I think it's they invited a creator into play and the creator came in and totally legitimately said, I want to do this. And they really said that breaks the guardrail. Mm-hmm. You know, that's my opinion about the Trevorrow script for episode 9.
Yep.
That particularly that later draft of how Rey used anger to resolve the problem, and that was portrayed as balance. That's a guardrail breaker for me. Mm-hmm. And I've been really enjoying this era because I think they're trying to really experiment while respecting those guardrails. I also like guardrails as a term because you can bounce into them. You can lean over them. You just can't smash through them. And I think I think if Star Wars is about hope, we are seeing that being pushed. You know, if it's about hope, ultimately, how much fear, pain, nihilism, darkness do we go through to get to the hope? And I hear that coming with Obi-Wan, with Andor, with the Acolyte that's about the dark side, allegedly. And I think final thought for me on this one is, I do think that Star Wars needs to evolve and needs to change. But I think there's a lot of room to just experiment with different genres. You know, how do we filter this story of hope and family into a horror movie, into a rom-com? How do we play with mood? How do we play with structure? There's tons to experiment while also respecting the guardrails.
Agree with that there. Well said. Well said. A couple more questions left here, and we don't want to spend all day here, especially with you, Jen, here. So I want to get to some of them here. The spirit of why not still exists without a doubt, and it's kind of what you're talking about, Joseph. Let's look over the guardrails. We won't jump over them, but let's look what's down there. We already knew that Kathleen Kennedy arranged a play date with Favreau and Filoni prior to developing The Mandalorian. They discussed at the interview here. Love that term, play date, but Filoni admitted to initially fighting the idea of Grogu, wanting to protect the mystery of Yoda and his origins, which was kind of like, hey, you know, George helped keep that a mystery. We know what ends up happening. What are your thoughts on this information that there was, as Kathleen said, like there was some caution, not debate, but just some ferocious caution thrown around around this idea here. Jen, I'll start with you on the Grogu of it all.
Oh my gosh, I love it. And, you know, Star Wars is about taking risks, whether it's in tech or story. Yoda was a risk, as we've talked about before. And so here again, baby Yoda, Grogu is a risk. Because Yoda feels so sacred, I can see why they would be very cautious about creating another character that people who are cynical might say, oh, they just created a cuter Yoda, right, for marketing. But they really thought about it. They weighed the pros and the cons. And in the end, Grogu won. Thank goodness for all of us, not just for the story, but for the toys. That is very important.
Yeah, I say this with a spirit of fun. Glad Filoni was wrong here. Glad he was wrong. And he had a hand in, you know, some of his early sketches, to be clear. I would have been, I think I would have been on Filoni's side of this cautious debate. I would have been like, no, we don't know anything, but this is the case of the guardrails in place, but creativity being allowed to, you know, kind of push those guardrails, explore how to fill the space between them. Joseph, your thoughts, and who did you want to win in this debate?
Well, I think everybody won, right?
That's the whole
point. And I really liked the interview one-on-one between Anthony Breznican and Kathleen Kennedy because it showed it was a conversation. Mm-hmm. And I liked her pushback of not against, cautious. Cautious.
Right. Yes.
And I think this is exactly what it should be. This is the exact kind of thing that should be discussed, because if you just stop at the Favreau saying, I want it to be a baby Yoda, and Filoni going, we don't touch Yodas. Right. And then it becomes this simple for or against argument. And that's clearly not what it was. It was Filoni saying, how do we do this? Because what I'm concerned about is the mystery of Yoda is a part of his charm. And then clearly Favreau's able to come in and go like, no, I don't want to like go to his home planet. Mm-hmm. That's not what I'm interested in. And I think that detail of how does it work? You know, why is it exciting or why is it scary? And getting down to the heart of it and the detail of it, this is a perfect example of the nuance won the day. And now that we've even come around full circle where not only have they preserved the mystery of Yoda's species, but Grogu is even framing how we see Yoda a little bit, right? With Luke's great line of, you know, that's how he spoke in riddles. Like now Grogu is even helping us, you know, see Yoda in new and fun ways, you know? So I think it's absolutely great.
Absolutely great. I love that little part of it there. All right, the big section here. Here we go. Obviously, the big hubbub was around the part of the interview about legacy characters, recastings, and the Solo of it all. Just quickly here, overall thoughts on this part of the interview, Joseph?
I really think that I think this is it's important not to be just a team A or B. Mm-hmm. I think people often have fights with about Kathleen Kennedy of like obviously there's some vitriol. Mm-hmm. I think it's always okay to respect someone and disagree with someone, and I think that for me, I understand some of what she is wrestling with, but I'm not entirely sure that I agree. I think it is a little bit for me, a little bit more case by case basis of mm-hmm. how you handle recasting and legacy characters. That's my big picture thought. I will say out of all the vitriol on social media, it was nice to just see a lot of people saying nice things about Alden Ehrenreich and Solo, because that sometimes doesn't happen. So that was at least nice.
Yes, it was. It was indeed. I agree with you there. It's not about a yes or no, A or B indeed. This was clearly, especially when the interview came out, a conversation. Jen, quickly, your thoughts here, then we'll get into the big debate in it.
Yeah, I just gave her a lot of leeway with that comment. I think that, again, you know, people took it a little bit more black and white. I think I understand what she was saying, which I'll explain in a minute.
So Kennedy seemed to express some real excitement along with Larry Kasdan to explore a character like Solo. Again, it was one of the first projects out of the gates there, but called the movie a learning experience and said that maybe she should have recognized that it wasn't the right move to revisit a legacy character without the DNA of the character in place. That's me kind of putting it all together there, of course. Generally, that was interpreted as recasting in the conversations online and only using deepfake type tech to use these characters. Do we agree that take? Because I'll just say I don't necessarily think that's what was intended. And do we agree with her, or at least understand a little bit where she's coming from here, Jen?
I understand her, because I thought Alden Ehrenreich was amazing as Han, but I think the lesson learned is that the story takes place 10 years before A New Hope, right? Around Solo, that's when it takes place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so they look too similar in age for the recasting to work. If you had cast Han Solo as a 13-year-old, you know what I mean? I think that would have been people would have accepted this young, quote unquote, young Han easier. I think Alden Ehrenreich supposedly playing a 19-year-old looked too close in age to the 29-year-old Harrison Ford in A New Hope, that people are just going to draw those comparisons. And I think that with somebody like Harrison Ford, who is still alive, who is still acting, who still has that Han Solo swagger, naturally, I just think that you don't want to mess with that. I think it'd be really hard to cast a young Luke Skywalker unless it's a really young Luke Skywalker, like right. we see in Kenobi. You know what I mean? So I think that they're just going to be a little bit more cautious. And with time, who knows what might happen? Maybe we'll get a new Luke. Who knows? I just think that they're also thinking about moving in a different direction and building on from the Skywalker saga, as she mentioned.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that there. I'll let you close the section out here, Joseph. I'll just say this. Like I said, I don't think it was just simply about recasting to deepfakes. But I have to be honest, on what she was trying to say, at least the feeling she was expressing, I'm choosing to focus on here. Because, Solo was one of those hills I'm prepared to die on, the movie. You know, and by the way, none of you out there should die on pop culture hills. Sorry, just as a joke. I mean, I've gotten in the most bar fights about it. I think I've affected friendships with my takes on it. I love this film. But I have to be honest with myself about this movie and the reactions, because I think what Kennedy was kind of saying here is, oh my gosh, we got Lawrence Kasdan, the guy helped build Solo to new heights and Empire, and let's redo this. And Alden's great, all those kind of things. But for every one of me, there's five people who are like, I didn't see it, or I hated that. That's what I run into still, even though there's a growing love of Solo, and I hope it continues to grow. And I'm going to be part of that movement to continue to grow the love of Solo and the purpose of that movie and Infus Nest and all these things. So much there in that movie. We love care. I could go on and on and on, but I just have to be honest. And I think she's just a little being honest here. Like, man, that was a tough sell, not just about box office. I think it was a thing about the TV show. Yeah, I hear people want it as a TV show. I think we might have run into the same thing, at least around Han Solo. I kind of like the idea, if it had been six parts, you would have got a little bit more of the story, more Kira, more Infus, more Val, more Beckett. I think she's not talking about that. She's talking about, I think people still would have pointed at the screen and said, that's not Harrison Ford. That's right. My interpretation, Joseph, of a lot of what was going on here. And I just have to be honest, she's not wrong about some of those reactions.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. No, I think that she is being a great producer in that she is acknowledging that the film Solo did not have the success that they wanted, and that a factor of that is – People's reaction to recasting Han Solo, as Jennifer was saying, so close in age to Harrison Ford. I think that as a producer, it's much better for her to say, hey, here's what I tried to learn. Here's what we were all thinking about. I really love the clarity because I think it gets lost in the conversation about Solo, that it's easy to be cynical and say this was a cash grab or it was fear-based because they just want to do legacy characters and we're so afraid to move away from legacy characters. I really like that she recommitted, like, the second we were deciding what we were going to do, Lawrence Kasdan wanted to do this because it sounded fun, because of all the things you've ever wanted to see, wouldn't you want to see a movie that's just focused on young Han Solo? That's so exciting. She talks about recapturing a feeling. And I think for me, the film did that. I'm not bothered by Alden's this difference in you know, physical appearance or voice. I'm not. It's about the spirit of it. And for me, I think I have this weird agree disagree where I'm like, but you did it, Kathleen.
Yeah.
For me, and you were saying this too, Ken. For me, Lawrence Kasdan, John Kasdan, Kathleen Kennedy, Alden Ehrenreich, you knocked it out of the park. You did. I came home, you know, wanting to jump on my bike and pretend it was the Millennium Falcon. They did it. It worked for me. But I also, so I think I find myself disagreeing a little bit because it worked for me. But I also think that she is a good producer in acknowledging that it didn't work for a lot of people. My other thing that I want to say very quickly about this is that, Well, certainly the recasting was an obstacle. I think that the release of the film, when it was released, the amount of hype that it got is a bigger problem. And there's always going to be people who didn't like the recasting, but we might not be having the same conversation if they had released it in December of 2018.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I agree with that. And hey, look, I had an experience recently. I was on another network doing a show about Solo, and I gave one of those four-center monologues about why the him getting the name was an important scene and all the deep themes. And then the producer of the show, after hearing my four-minute rant, went, yeah, nah, it sucks. And what are you going to do? I'm still going to say those things. I'm still going to have those monologues. But I think the it sucks is what Kathleen was feeling and at least talking about. But yeah, I agree to justice. Some agree to disagree because we love it here. So any final thoughts on that or before we close this out here today, Jennifer?
No, I love it. I makes me even more confident about this new I say new era. Because, I mean, it's not really a new era, but it kind of feels like a new era. And I like that she's being honest and she's being transparent with their thoughts. And I really appreciate that. And not everyone may agree with her decisions, but I'm so impressed. I think she's doing a phenomenal job steering this ship.
Yeah. I think that final thought on the whole Solo and recasting thing is, yeah, I don't think she's saying anything black and white. I don't think she's saying we will never recast again. We are always doing deep fakes. I think she is saying we realize that we have to handle them with a ton of caution and take it with a case by case basis. Right. She's obviously not saying it, and it was a mistake to cast 10-year-old Luke Skywalker in Obi-Wan Kenobi. That's obviously not what she's saying. So I think there is still a lot of room and nuance in this and questions that will come to be answered about what this means for the Lando series.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Final thing here. Kathleen bemoaned the making of these big films and shows say that it lacks some of the fun she used to have back in the day with Lucas and Spielberg in that era. But that drove home the fact that she wants to preserve that feeling of spontaneity and a good time while making all of these things. So I saw that as between darkness and light, there is hope. She was admitting it's just not fun anymore, but I need to fight for that and preserve that fun is how I took that off base there, Jennifer.
No, I think it is a sad state of the film industry specifically. Mm-hmm. I see John and Dave on the Mandalorian set, and they sure look like they're having a lot of fun. Robert Rodriguez looked like he was having a great time on Book of Boba Fett, right? So it still is there, but behind the scenes, it's always has been about money. But there is definitely more about marketing with social media and hiring influencers that feels a little bit more calculated, I guess, in more recent years. But gotcha. that's a topic for another day.
Another day, indeed. Joseph, what do you think about Kathleen wanting to have some fun still?
In some ways, that was the biggest impact of both the articles, because I believe the main Vanity Fair article ended on this quote. And I really felt that of like, this is where all this genre stuff that we love, this pop culture stuff we love came from. of, you know, people like Lucas and Spielberg and endless other creators and the creators are inspired by, going like, I've got a big, fun, wild, weird idea. I'm going to throw it up there. And there was always financial risk. But I think now we're in this place where, you know, it's so great to love Star Wars. This whole entire podcast or community is about loving Star Wars. But I think about the lesson of Star Wars of like, I want to love it, without ever having that love, like Anakin's love for Padme, curdle into anger and possession. That for me is the big thing that I take away of like, is a fan. I think I have a responsibility if I don't like something to express it in a calm way, or vote with my dollars so that creators feel a little bit more safety to explore and play and find joy. Cause then we'll feel that in the stories if the creators are feeling that.
Absolutely. Yes. Well said. Good way to take us home there, Joseph. Any other final thoughts? Anything I left on the table? We didn't go into the VR, the Star Wars metaverse that she's talking about, a lot of other things here, Jen.
Oh my gosh. The ability to live in part of Star Wars all the time. Sign me up.
Yeah. Sign me up, Joseph.
Yeah. No, the only other thing that I wanted to remark upon again is I loved how much all the actors talked about their kids. Go back to the beginning when Diego Luna was talking about secrecy. He had the quote, I have kids, man. It's painful for them and for me. Yeah. So maybe that's why Tony Gilroy in this most recent article told a lot so that Diego Luna can share it with his kids.
Love that. We are out of here. Big news discussion today. Yeah, more interviews dropping. Gizmodo had an interview with Deborah Chow, kind of talking about the Kenobi, learning about Anakin and all that kind of stuff. So that stuff's out there too. But we are we wanted to focus on these two big stories today as we head into Star Wars Celebration. All right, that's it for today. You can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We're available on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, and more. Hey, if you're on Apple Podcasts, leave us a review. We like that. Merch available. But tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter and patreon.com/ForceCenter is where you can support us. You can follow me at KatNapsok or go to my website, KatNapsok.com, for information on upcoming comedy shows and other things. This week, to highlight for charities, I want to go back to something I've highlighted before, only because my friend Jeff Saunders, who's a ForceCenter listener, is heading out. He's actually taking a road trip and he's going to Star Wars Celebration, his first celebration. He's been waiting. He had tickets 2 years ago. And to do so, he has to take time off from his job, which is he's a nurse at a children's cancer hospital. So he has to leave the important work to go take a moment for himself, which he earns and is, it's well-deserved. But while he's gone, I want to highlight stbaldrick's.org, where you can help conquer kids' cancers by going to stbaldrick's.org and the St. Baldrick's Foundation and choose to support if you want. They got a lot of cool events. He's always part of some head shaving charity drives. I'm going to try to get involved with one of those at his location in 2023. So that is my choice there. Jennifer, what about you?
You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Jennifer Landa and TikTok at Jennifer Landa 1138. I just want to say that if you're going to Celebration this week, have a wonderful time. Stay safe. I hope to see you there. If you're waiting for Kenobi, oh my gosh, this has been such a long wait, right? And it's finally going to be here. Don't let anyone online steal your joy. Know that you have a safe space to come back to with us here at Force Center. We're going to be analyzing. We are going to be celebrating it. We might have a few criticisms, but we're going to be measured and thoughtful. And so I can't wait to see you guys all on the other side.
Love it there. Joseph, take us home.
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw, and all my other comedy stuff on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. I want to continue to highlight the service Vote Forward. You can go to their website and check it out and see if it's for you. It's votefwd.org. And boy, did Jennifer just knock it out of the park with her sentiments about what's coming up with Kenobi. So excited for the celebration part of Star Wars Celebration and can't wait to see fellow fans there.
Absolutely. Between darkness and light, choose hope. We'll see you all at Celebration. And we got a question episode this week. Don't you worry. That's it for this week. We'll see you next time on Force Center.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter.
Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.